As we said, Jenna Lane making her debut with us here, covers the Bucks for ESPN. She's with us right now. Jenna, how are you today?
Hi, Jenna.
I'm doing well. I'm actually up in Bristol right now getting ready for the NFL draft. So we have a mock draft that airs tonight on ESPN at 7 o'clock. So we've been anxiously preparing for that, and you can certainly feel the excitement around here with everything that's going to be happening this week with the draft.
Very good.
Well, the real exciting thing, though, is my buddy Phil Yates' birthday. So, I mean, any cakes? I mean, I text him today. I mean, you know, the best hair in all of television for males anyway. Any big party for Phil today in Bristol?
You know, I'm not sure because I haven't seen him yet today, but he will be part of our show. He's one of the hosts of the show. Mm-hmm. Nobody has told me. I guess John Fox is going to be taking Bill Polian's role. There's not going to be a gong. I'm not sure if you know, exactly, you know, where everybody fits in there. But I did hear something tonight about possibly a sheet cake, but I think that was because a reporter lost his cell phone in the parking lot, and that was his tenant. So I don't think that has anything to do with Steele's birthday. But I'm glad you mentioned it to me because I will be sure to mention I'll be sure to tell him happy birthday.
I think he's old enough to drink now. I'm just guessing. All right, speaking of mock drafts, certain things can happen. Jenna, what position, what are you leaning at if you were to pick for the Buccaneers right now at what, number five?
Well, you know, when it gets a little tricky because there's not, I mean, everybody thinks that Kyler Murray is going to go to the Cardinals, but we don't know with absolute certainty. You even hear, okay, well, what if Arizona tries to trade out of that spot? I mean, there's all these what ifs. And then, of course, the Oakland Raiders, which selected four, they put a bunch of their scouts on a plane and sent them home for the weekend because they feel like they can't trust anybody in the room. So we're hearing all kinds of different things with the Raiders. So I've gone through a few different scenarios. Obviously, it works out in the Bucks' best interest. The more quarterbacks that will go up top, I think, you know, Kyler Murray is the only guy that's really worthy of that top five pick. And so after that, it's a matter of, you know, does a defensive lineman fall into their laps perhaps? Because I have a hard time believing that Quinnen Williams would fall to them at five. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you've even seen it in recent mock drafts. You know, it's not that far-fetched of an idea for Josh Allen to potentially fall to five. I mean, it could happen. And, you know, then you also, I don't think anybody's really talking much about Ed Oliver. Everybody likes to talk about Devin White, obviously. Everybody knows the Bucks really, really like him. I think even my grandmother knows that the Bucks really, really like him. And she's been out of the loop a little bit recently with some health issues. So, but I really think that, you know, when you look at impact, like, I mean, the scenarios that I keep kind of going through, I come out with, you know, if Josh Allen falls to them, you know, if Quinn Williams falls to them, you know, those are two no-brainers. What about Ed Oliver and what about Devin White? Well, like, for instance, one of my radio mm-hmm. colleagues on the ESPN affiliate in Tampa, mm-hmm. you know, he thinks that they would go with White. And I said, you know what, I'm not so certain because of Gerald McCoy's future. I think they will strongly consider Ed Oliver in that spot. And you look at a potential impact when a guy is playing closer to the ball, I think that that's worth something. And it's not to discredit White because, I mean, he could very well, if they pass on him, it could be one of those situations like how Luke Kuechly was several years ago when they passed on him and they selected Mark Barron. It could come back to haunt them for years. But I just really think with Todd Bowles coming in, they're going to a 3-4. Yep. They need impact. Well, where can you make the most impact? Well, you can do it up front. So plus, I really like the defensive line prospects in this draft. It's loaded with really good, talented defensive linemen. So, but those are the four guys that I would really be looking at in that number five spot. I also wouldn't rule trading down either because Jason Light, two out of the last 3 years, has traded down in the first round.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned Gerald McCoy. So Jason Light with McCoy, I know he's being hush-hush about it, but he's owed $13 million this year. We all think he's, you know, he's not going to be on the team. But what's the holdup here? And how is this going to affect him on Thursday?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, they obviously, the reason they're holding on to him is because, well, for one, you know, you want to maybe try to get the guy to take a pay cut. And if he's not willing to take a pay cut, and I have no indication to believe that that's happened, and I certainly haven't seen it, but, you know, if he hasn't been there for 3 weeks, you don't want him to get hurt during the Bucs offseason program. That's why Bruce Arians told him not to come, mm-hmm. so that you don't potentially risk injury, so that you can still have trade value. It's going to be really hard to trade him when you have a draft class that is loaded with a lot of young guys that have his kind of potential. Quinnen Williams, Ed Oliver, mm-hmm. those are just guys at the top. I mean, you know, Christian Wilkins, for instance. I mean, you just Dexter Lawrence, you just go down the line. There's just there's a lot of really good potential three technique guys that you can use. And so I don't know what they would be able to get from him. But, you know, you don't want to essentially just cut the guy and then get nothing. So if they can get maybe a later round draft pick for him, I think they're hoping that maybe one of these teams that, you know, had their eye on one of these defensive tackles, they miss out and they get desperate and then they try to trade for him. But you know what? With him on their current payroll, they only got about $2 million in cap space. Yikes. If they owe him $13 million. Mm-hmm. They don't even have enough to pay their draft picks. You've got $9 million approximately if their picks stay. If they stay with all their picks right now, they're going to need about $9 million to pay those guys. You know, they're not going to be able to do that. So, but they technically could hold on to him until after the draft. Granted, it wouldn't really benefit them, you know, to not be able to get any draft capital this year. But say maybe they get a pick for next year. That could certainly help them out in that. But they want to be able to get something for him. The problem, though, is that, you know, I talked to teams, several teams at the Combine. They were all led to believe that Gerald was going to be returning this season based on conversations they had with the team. And then you have Bruce Arians at owners' meetings saying, well, he's not the same player that he was, you know, a few years ago. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, I think if he had come out at the Combine and said that, yeah, you could have opened the dialogue for a possible trade. And when the teams, like say for the Buffalo Bills, for instance, the Indianapolis Colts, they have all the salary cap room, you know, they could have included McCoy in their plans. Okay, we know what, we can sign this guy or we could try to trade for him. Now it's like teams don't have a cap. The only way a team can even take on McCoy is if they try to adjust his salary. Mm-hmm.
Jenna Lane is with us from ESPN, literally in Bristol, getting ready for the draft. We're talking about the Buccaneers, and I know we're talking about the Bucs, but you did say something interesting to me about the Raiders just a moment ago. It's because we spent a lot of real estate on it yesterday. When you heard that there's no longer trust among a scouting staff and they're sent home, what does that mean to you? Does that mean that nobody's on the same page? That one guy says a player's good, another player says a player's bad? Do you think they have other motives because maybe they're leaving for another team? I mean, what does that mean to you when you hear scouts aren't trusted, we're sending them home a week before the draft?
Anytime you have a regime change with any organization, anytime someone is left over from the previous, I think you always are going to have a certain level of distrust or suspicion because you wonder, are these guys loyal to the previous members of the staff? Are they just here, you know, under contract and they're, are they really committed? And not just that, but buy-in. And this is an organization that has just done complete overhauls and made some moves that have been, a lot of people would deem unfavorable between Khalil Mack. You know, you obviously, you know, get rid of Amari Cooper, just tremendous players. And certainly we can see what they're envisioning by being able to do that and wanting to kind of start over and rebuild. But, you know, between getting a new head coach and getting a new general manager, and you have scouts that have been part of previous regimes, especially this time of year, you know, you got to know that everybody that's in your room, you can't run the risk of having a leak. And so this time of year, too, teams, they clamp down so much on information that, I mean, they don't want anything to get out. So if they feel like they can't trust anybody, yeah, they're going to have to clear the room and they're going to have to, you know, maybe it's just head coach and GM and maybe just a few other staff members, but that's it. I mean, sometimes that's needed, and it's not uncommon for teams either. When they get new regimes to come in, you know, new, and it'll happen if it's front office members, scouts and stuff, it'll happen after the draft. They'll go ahead and clean house because they just feel like they have to start over.
No, we were talking about McCoy and the defense, and you know, deep down, I'm not really worried about their defense. To me, this is all about Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich, and if they can possibly reach into Jameis Winston's soul and dig out the quarterback that I think he's capable of being, and just to, if he just doesn't fumble, or just fumble a third less of the time, maybe the defense will look better. They can put some points on the board, particularly in the end zone. But, man, damn it, he is so frustrating to watch, Jen. And I'm hoping this year that Bruce and Byron can get to this guy and bring out the potential that I think many of us think he has.
And you put it so eloquently, like reaching down into his soul. And because I think we have all seen that potential, you know, I mean, I've spent my whole career in Florida, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched every college snap that he took and you see the winner that he can be and everything. And not just that, but his ability to keep plays alive. I mean, he's a winner. He doesn't always do it pretty. Sometimes it's, oh my God, you know, did he just do that? And then sometimes it's like, oh my God, because, and it's just, it's either one way or the other, high risk, high reward. the thing that it could go one of two ways with Arians. It's either going to, I think, it could be a train wreck because you have a coach and a player who both take a lot of risks. I mean, Arians is not afraid to throw the ball deep, 1 yard line, you know, a stretch play when a lot of people would be like, oh my gosh, you know, a long developing play downfield when he's got the potential to be sacked in his own end zone for a safety. A lot of coaches wouldn't call that, but Arians is all no risk it, no biscuit. Or it could have the potential to help Jameis, because one thing is that it's been so ingrained in his mind, don't turn the ball over, don't turn the ball over, don't turn the ball over. Look, in my gymnastics days, when I would tell myself all the time, don't fall off the beam, don't fall off the beam, I usually end up falling off the beam. So, you know, the one thing that really stuck out to me when I talked to Arians when he was first hired is he said, I don't want him looking over his shoulder, I don't want him playing scared. And I think that there's a certain element, that there's a certain amount of importance to that with that position. You don't want to be careless, but at the same time, you don't want to be timid and you don't want to be afraid, because that suddenly starts clouding your mind. But it's going to be really interesting. You mentioned Leftwich. Arians is not going to be calling the plays. You know, that's going to be Leftwich's job. And one thing that I thought that Byron said was really interesting is that he said, because Leftwich is such, when he was a quarterback in the league, he was so scripted and everything was inside the pocket. He said that being Ben Roethlisberger's backup helped him so much to become a coach, and it's helped him, it's going to help him coach Jameis. Because first of all, when the first time he watched Jameis play at Florida State, he said, that's Ben Roethlisberger. And he was up at Pittsburgh at the time. But it was also, he said, that working with Ben helped him learn how to be flexible and how to, you know, account for a guy's ability to improvise. And so I'm curious to see how much that time with Ben, and knowing that you've got to give this guy some freedom to keep plays alive, you've got to give him the ability to extend plays. You know, a lot of times what you draw up, you know, he might see it differently. And Jameis, he's very creative with his ability to keep plays alive. So maybe it's not what you've drawn up in your head, but he's able to make it work. And we've seen Jameis do that, you know, a few times, and really just some highlight worthy stuff. We just haven't seen maybe enough of it as we'd like up until this point in his career.
Jenna Lane is with us from ESPN, covers the Bucks, with us here on Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN. Who at the NFL scheduling department doesn't like the Buccaneers? They're going to go 49 days in between home games. There's one three-game stretch. I think they do like 28,000 miles. That's going to be a rough stretch.
My gosh. I mean, of course, we're talking about story ideas for this year, and I really I wrote in that span, I said, I don't even know if I picked them to win one game in that span, but just to give people an idea of what we're talking about here. And I, you know, I was thinking, all right, maybe I'll do some kind of a story on, you know, 49 straight days away from home and what that's like for them. I don't think people realize how to go from, and just those first three games, you know, they go from LA, then they go to New Orleans, and then they go to England, London to play. And that's 30 miles round, or 30,000 miles round trip just in that span alone. Yeah. And then after the bye week, and thank God they get the bye week, but then it continues. I mean, even little details like, you know, some of these players that are, they live by themselves with their dogs, like try getting a pet sitter for that many weeks in a row. I mean, that's really challenging. And I know the fans are pretty upset about it. The team isn't really coming out and saying anything about it publicly, but I know the folks inside that organization are livid. But the one thing I'd remind folks is that game in London is technically a Bucks home game, but they had to play it in London if they wanted to be able to get the 2021 Super Bowl. For the Tampa Bay region, it has been a source of major frustration for a while, because they were getting, you know, the NCAA championship game. They were hosting Final Fours. They were, you know, hosting, they were awarded WrestleMania. They were hosting all these big events, but they couldn't get that Super Bowl. And they made all these stadium upgrades over the course of several years now, and they still weren't getting it. And that was one of the things that they had to agree to, is that in a certain span, I believe it was 5 years, they had to agree to play a game overseas in London and have to give up a home game. Mm. So that's what we got there. But at the same time, did it really have to be, on the heels of playing, you know, the Rams and playing the Saints in back-to-back weeks, and then going to London, and the fact that it's a divisional opponent, I mean, all those things. And then even in week two, this is a brand-new offense, brand-new defense, and they're playing on the road on Thursday Night Football in week two. I mean, that's really tough.
Yeah.
Well, I hope our friends at Bristol, when you go to London, I'm assuming you're going, right, and that they put you up. I don't know if you've been there before, but if you haven't, make sure they send you to Claridge's and put you up there. I believe Margaret Thatcher still has tea, high tea, every day at 4 o'clock. Wow. It is one of the greatest hotels I've ever been in my life, and you deserve to be there. You deserve the best because you're a South Florida grad, right?
Gymnast extraordinaire,
big Bull fan. Yep. So
thank you.
Yeah, and but just real quick with college football and bat, you happy with your program so far at USF? I mean, in the last few years.
You know, it's interesting because like when I was a student there, I guess I'm dating myself a little bit, but I was there during the Big East, and so now it's interesting, you know, because of the emergence of the American Athletic Conference and the fact that now, granted, when I was a student at South Florida, I wasn't expecting USF to play for a national title game or anything like that, but. You know, now, I mean, we've seen, and we especially have seen it with Central Florida, it's very frustrating as a fan to watch, to know that, you know, the best they can do is you know, it's still not good enough in the playoff picture's mind and the committee's mind. And I just think that that's frustrating because as a fan, you know, you ultimately go to games because you want to believe in fairness and you believe that, you know, it's a level playing field. You, with the exception of WWE, you know, you go to games because it's not scripted. There's nothing that's rigged about it or anything like that. I think it's frustrating for that fan base and to try to grow that fan base more. Knowing that they don't have that seat at the table anymore. And so I know that the school has fought so hard to try to get that. And the thing is when you have a seat at the table and then that seat's taken away, I think that's why, for instance, you know, Central Florida, they were in Conference USA prior. And so it's not, I think you've seen that fan base continue to grow, whereas where I think South Florida, it's made things a lot more challenging, I think, for that fan base to continue to grow, to try to get those student numbers up. The issue of an on-campus stadium, you know, it used to be when I was there and Coach Leavitt, Jim Leavitt was the head coach, you know, there was some appeal to playing in an NFL stadium. It's not really like that anymore. You know, there's a lot of people that prefer college football over NFL, yep. You know, and they're really two different animals and two different styles of play, especially with the spread and really how that's taken over college football. It's just very, very different. And so, you know, I think a lot of those things are working against them, but I really like Mike Kelly and what he has done, you know, taking over that athletic program and everything. I think they're doing some really great things. You know, basketball, I think I never thought I'd say this, but I think the men's basketball program is finally on its way up. The women, Coach Jose Fernandez has been there even since I was a student. I was there for their first trip to the NCAA tournament, and he just continues to just develop, you know, really, really great talent. So it's been really great to see the way that the direction that the school is going. But, you know, football tends to rule the roost and you would like to see, you know, and I think some of this also has to do with consistency. You build a fan base when you have the same coach in place for a long period of time. And, you know, thankfully they're getting that consistency back with Charlie Strong, but it's going to take them a while, I think, to really, you know, get back what they had, you know, back when, you know, they beat West Virginia on Thursday night on national TV and they beat Kansas at home and things like that. You know, when they upset Louisville twice, they beat Miami, they beat Clemson. It's going to take them, I think, a little while to get that back. And that also has to do with the fact that, scheduling wise, you know, they really, there's even more emphasis on getting those non-conference opponents. They matter so much more.
No doubt. Jenna, enjoy the draft on Thursday night, and we can't thank you enough for coming on today. Appreciate it.
Let's do this again soon, and just grab Fields' hair and just mess it up before the show tonight.
Oh,
tell him it's from me.
Oh, yes, I can't do that.
He's a friend of the show.
Give him a zonk. Just put your knuckles in and just muss it up. You know, just mess it up a little bit.
I'm going to tell him you said that.
Yes, you can.
I tell him all the time.
Okay. All right. And I'll be sure to give him a happy birthday from you as well.
Thank you.
All right, Jenna.
Thanks, Jenna. We'll talk soon.
That is Jenna Lane from ESPN covering the Bucks. She's in Bristol getting ready for the mock draft on TV, and Field Yates is going to be part of that as well, and she'll be there.
She's a great gymnast at USF, by the way. Very good athlete.
Oh, I liked having her on very much. That was very good.